principles that can be applied from Old Testament examples. And we're going to start tonight with Abraham, Genesis chapter 12 and Genesis chapter 20. We'll get there in a minute. I've got to tell you something funny first. At least I think it's funny. I mentioned a few weeks ago about my sons not answering their cell phones. Do you remember that? Were you here for that? And, you know, it's way day, and so I'm trying to figure out how I forget to give them money to go and eat. You know, the kids come here, and then they go somewhere to eat. And they always want to know, where's the money, Dad? Where's the money? So I told you that I had hid some in a track rack. Remember that? And that's why I wanted them to, because I left before they got here, so I put it behind one of the tracks, and then I sent it to Luke to find out where to pick it up, and he wouldn't answer his phone, so it was frustrating. So today I left again, and I set it behind a track rack. And it was behind Why Human Suffering. That's why I put it behind, a $20 bill behind Why Human Suffering. So I thought no one's probably going to look that up. But anyway, a few weeks ago, it was Tim Woodward that said to me, he said, you know, I learned one thing from class this week. I said, what? He says, I should look at the tracks more. I thought that was funny. So, but don't expect there to be a $20 bill behind the track rack, because usually now they know that that's where they got to go to pick it up. Got to hide it somewhere. So I guess I'm going to come up with a new place. Otherwise, now the teenagers find out they're going to be going through the track rack. Maybe they'll pick one up and read something. That'd be good. All right. Genesis 12 and Genesis 20, those two chapters bring to us a side of Abraham that is seldom discussed, because it's not the Abraham that we've really come to know and love. It's the Abraham that was a little deceptive. So let's look over there. Let's go to Genesis chapter 12 first. We go past the promise, and we go down to about verse 8, where it says, he moved from the mountain east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west, Ai on the east, and he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. And he journeyed, and he went on toward the south, and there was a famine in the land, and he went down to Egypt to sojourn there, and the famine was severe in the land. And it came to pass, when he was close to entering Egypt, that he said to Sarai, his wife, indeed, I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance. Therefore, it will happen when the Egyptians see you that they will say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say you are my sister, that it may be well with me for your sake, that I may live because of you. So it was when Abram came to Egypt that the Egyptians saw the woman, that she was very beautiful. The princes of Pharaoh also saw her and commended her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. He treated Abram well for her sake. He had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys, and camels. But the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. So Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister? I might have taken her as my wife. Now, therefore, here is your wife. Take her and go your way. So Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. Now, that's episode 1. We move over to Genesis chapter 20, and this is after Abram and Lot separate, and this is after he rescues Lot, and this is after the promise of Isaac and the incident with Ishmael, Hagar and Ishmael, and this is after Sarah and Abraham's faith is tested, and this is after Sodom and Gomorrah are destroyed. And now we're in Genesis chapter 20. It's before the birth of Isaac, but in between all of those things. So here we go again. And Abraham, his name has been changed, journeyed from there to the south and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur, and sojourned in Gerar. Now Abraham said of Sarah his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, indeed you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife. But Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, Lord, will you slay a righteous nation also? Did he not say to me, she is my sister? And she even herself said, he is my brother. In the integrity of my heart and innocence of my hands, I have done this. And God said to him in a dream, yes, I know that you did this in the integrity of your heart, for I also withheld you from sinning against me, therefore I did not let you touch her. Now therefore restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours. So Abimelech rose early in the morning, called all his servants, and told all these things in their hearing. And then the men were very afraid. And Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? How have I offended you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? You have done deeds to me that ought not to be done." And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What did you have in view that you have done this thing?" And Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife. But indeed she is truly my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And it came to pass when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, 'This is your kindness that you should do for me. In every place, wherever we go, say of me, he is my brother.'" Then Abimelech took sheep, oxen, and male and female servants, and gave them to Abraham, and he restored Sarah his wife to him. And Abimelech said, "See, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you." Then to Sarah he said, "Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Indeed, this vindicates you before all who are with you and before all others." Thus she was reproved. So Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech, his wife, and his maidservants. Then they bore children, for the Lord had closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Well, there you go. I read both texts. Just want to get through all of that, because there's more to it than just saying that Abraham and Sarah plotted together to tell people that they were brother and sister rather than husband and wife. What is it that we want to talk about? Well, I want to talk about the consequences of deception. And we might even ask, what about lying? Now, how do we define it? Was what Abraham and Sarah did wrong? Or was it okay? What do you think? I have this quote here that says, "The essence of lying is in deception and not in words." So it's in the intent, isn't it, sometimes, more than in what we're doing. So that's just something. There are ramifications of deception, aren't there? And you know, but we could get into a pretty interesting discussion about lying, because take Rahab, for example. What did Rahab do? Did she lie? Did she deceive? Yeah, what was the consequence of her deception in that case? Saved her house, and she was called faithful. Okay, so we don't want to get this mixed up, because the Bible is very clear about lying, and so maybe we need a more clear definition. Is that fair? Let's look at a few verses. I'll just tell some of these to you. "A false witness shall not be unpunished. He that speaks lies shall perish." Proverbs 19 and verse 9. Proverbs 12 and verse 22. "Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but they that deal truly are his delight." Psalm 101 verse 7. "He that works deceit shall not dwell in the house." Colossians 3 verse 9. "Lie not to one another." Luke 8 verse 17. "Nothing is in secret. All shall be made manifest, whether it's hidden." Anything that's hidden will be made known. Proverbs 12 and verse 19. "The lip of truth shall be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment." Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 25. "Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one with another." John 8 and verse 44 says that the devil is the father of lies. What about one of the Ten Commandments? Exodus 20 and verse 16. "Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor." Revelation 21 and verse 8 says, "But the fearful, unbelieving, abominable murderers, whoremongers, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death." So is lying a sin? Obviously, it's a sin. So but as far as speaking the truth, this is tough for me. Help me out. Someone save me. I've put forth a proposition to you that is hard to explain. What about Ananias and Sapphira? Why did they die? They lied. They lied to the Holy Spirit. They lied to God. They misrepresented what they had given. Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about Abraham here. That's really kind of what I wanted to get at. When someone sees Abraham not telling the truth about the identity of Sarah, what is your concept of, or your thought about him as an individual? Would you say that that was a weakness? Self-preservation. So here was my deal with that. Who is the father of the faithful? Abraham, right? He is the father of the faithful, which means he trusted in God, right? If we looked at a person that trusted in God more than any other person, I mean, who took his son to the altar and was ready to kill his son? Abraham. I mean, we just don't find a more faithful person than Abraham. But what we see is a side of his humanity, don't we? And we can kind of see the difference between how humans are and how God is. Because what does it say about God with regard to lying? What about himself? What about God himself in lying? He cannot lie. He cannot. It's impossible for God to lie. So we see the difference between, we can't put Abraham too high on a pedestal, and maybe that this is delivered to us for that purpose. Maybe it's also for us to see that even faithful individuals are not perfect in faith. And maybe when we think about faith, we can almost put it into categories. Because when it came to being willing to sacrifice his son, Abraham was willing. When it took Abraham the faith to leave everything behind and to move his family to a place that God hadn't shown him, he had that, didn't he? We could go on and on about Abraham's faith in different situations, what he was willing to do and how he was willing to trust God. But over this little one thing, self-preservation, he had concocted this scheme. And Sarah went along with him, and they did it together. Yeah, go ahead. But we would also say that if he trusted God, then perhaps he would have been willing to believe that God would deliver him rather than to try to deliver himself. Was there another situation in which Abraham got in front of God? What about Ishmael? And what about Isaac? And not waiting. And even though that was Sarah's original plan, Abraham went along with it. And because of that, that caused problems. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, he didn't paint a picture of Abraham that was unrealistic for us. And yet he still used Abraham as the one that we would all look to as an example of faith. And in a sense, it gives me a great deal of encouragement to realize that my faith, while I aim at perfection, when I fall short of perfection, God can be patient. And God was patient with Abraham in this case. I don't know if you noticed this in the reading with Abimelech, but Abimelech turns to Sarah and says, "Hey, I've given your brother, you know, a bunch of..." Did you see that? He didn't say, "I've given your husband." "I've given your brother," since that's what you said he was. "You know, these are the things, and I've redeemed you," or "you've been reproved." I don't think Abimelech was very happy about it. One of the things that I wanted to point out in this series, in talking about Old Testament moments that bring forth New Testament principles, is that our choices affect other people. Our choices affect other people. For example, when we get to talking about the favoritism of Isaac and Rebekah towards their sons, that affected generations of people. Go ahead. I agree with you. No, this is a good point. This is a very good point Art makes. If you didn't hear what Art said, he said he doesn't see anywhere in Genesis 12 and Genesis 20 that God disciplined Abraham for what he had done. And I read up about this, just other people's opinions. I'm a human with an opinion, and you're a human with an opinion about this situation, and what does this all mean? But a lot of individuals saw nothing wrong with what Abraham did, because God at least didn't punish Abraham in this case. Who was in danger of being punished? Pharaoh was. And, yeah, Abimelech was. One of the things that you do see with Abraham is that God really was protecting him. Wasn't. In fact, look over to Genesis chapter 15, I think it is, and I was reading from Genesis 20 all the way through, and this is where I came across this. Look what it says in the first verse of Genesis 15. This is God's encouragement to Abraham. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, "Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward." Now, if Abram had listened to that statement and had not been afraid, the question is, would he have gone on with the deception? And maybe sometimes what's lacking in our faith is our willingness to trust God to deliver us in situations in which we are compromised. And here Abram was, could we say, what was Abram's motivation for the deception? What was it? He didn't want to die. And he had a wife that was obviously very fair, beautiful woman. By the way, go ahead, what? Old but beautiful, she said. Evidently old but beautiful. You know, it's interesting, this whole concept too. I think about being a woman in that, those of you that are women out there, when you read that, you just say, well, they came into the land and Pharaoh just took her, you know? And then they came over here to Abimelech and Abimelech just called for her. And how much choice did Sarah have in this whole deal? Not a lot. Not a lot. She had really none. And she went. Now, in both cases, God kept her from being touched. And again, maybe that's a good example that God does preserve his people, because he really, more than taking care of Abram, who did he really protect? He protected Sarah, because she was the one that was compromised. She was the one that was going to be taken as a wife when she was already married to someone else. And so that was God's preservation of her. And God, you go all the way back to Genesis chapter 12, and then his explanation in Genesis chapter 20. What did Abram say to Abimelech? He said, we've had this pact ever since I left what? My hometown. That everywhere we went, she would just say that she was my sister. Had they kept that pact? Seems as though that this was the case all of these years. And as Art pointed out, God never punished them for that decision that they were trying to make to preserve Abraham. Now, that's why I discussed this idea of Rahab. What was intended by Rahab was basically she was taking an oath to protect these spies, and a promise was made based on her willing to do that. So that gets us into this another question. Is it sometimes okay to withhold information? What do you think? Is it sometimes okay to withhold information? I didn't hear that question. Did anyone hear that question? Well, this is the reason why I'm asking this question, because what about our children? Sometimes our children ask us questions. Have you seen that, isn't it for Farm Bureau insurance, where that kid's asking all these questions to his dad at the counter about things that are maybe too adult, and he doesn't know what to say? There are times that we even protect our kids from information because it's not their time yet to know what it is that they need to know. So there are times where I suppose we always have to think about what God's will is in a situation. In Rahab's case, she was protecting God's people, and so she was not aiding the enemy in the destruction of God's people. And because of that, she was considered a very faithful person. She knew that if she was caught, what was going to happen to her and her family? She was going to die. But she also knew that if she didn't do it, her family was going to die anyway. And so she, in that particular case, chose the greater good. I don't want you to come away from this class thinking that deception is okay. I don't want you to think that telling a lie is okay. Because telling a lie, it says, is an abomination in the eyes of God. I really wanted to talk more about the fact that the decisions that we make when we're not forthcoming have long-term effects on the people in our lives, just like we'll be talking about in other cases as we go forward. Let's talk about this for a minute. What are there different types of lies? There are different types of lies, right? For example, bearing false witness is what? What's bearing false witness? It's taking an oath to tell the truth and then telling a lie. And it's also presenting a false idea about some situation or an individual. And therefore, it's damaging to whoever it may affect. Yeah, sure. That's what happened with Jesus, wasn't it? These people came in into these courts that weren't even really legal, and they spoke all types of, they bore false witness about who Jesus was and who he claimed to be and what he had done. It says they set up false witnesses against him. It was intentionally done to do damage to him so that he could be put to death. What about this? Slander. Is slander a lie? You know what's really tricky about watching the media? Is I don't know what is the truth anymore, and I don't know what is slander. Don't know who to believe, do you? In fact, if you were to even look in the political scheme, and I do not want to get into a political discussion with this, so I'm just making a point. But you probably know that you can watch different news channels, and those news channels are geared to support a political party one way or the other. And therefore, when you watch that, you think, well, if I want to get on this camp over here, I'm going to watch this news media. If I want to get over here in this camp, I'm going to watch this news media. But who's really telling the truth? I don't trust the media. I don't. Yeah, I don't. I mean, and you might like one more than another, and that's fine. And I'm not trying to get into an argument about it. But it's hard sometimes to tell the difference between someone reporting the news and someone willing to slander someone, because it's very popular right now to attack people's character. Now, the problem is that when the truth is revealed, most of these people are guilty. I mean, I'm not saying they're not guilty. There's a lot of sin in the world. And that's what we want to talk about, and that's what makes the news, right? Good deeds don't make the news. Usually the things that are sensational make the news, and people thrive on that. They want to hear the latest thing. But I think it's just a sad segment of our society that slander is something that is often overlooked but very damaging on people. And, you know, what does it say in the scriptures about something against anybody, slander against anybody without witnesses? It's a sin. We should not cast people down without evidence. Okay, here's another lie, gossip. Gossip is a lie. So gossip is a little different than slander. Slander is probably obviously aimed at someone specifically. But gossip is just something that's very easy to get caught up in. What's that? Yeah, a tale grows with the telling. And another quote that I saw was that a lie can get halfway around the world before the truth gets its shoes on. I've heard that before. That there's a lot of things that get told and they get spread, and by the time the story grows, doesn't it? And something that you didn't hear from a first or primary source, you better just take it with a grain of salt. Bill, go ahead. Yeah, you'd whisper it, and then you'd whisper to the next guy, and by the time you got around to see if it would make it all the way around the room. We've played that game before, too, with the youth group, just to kind of give them an example of the fact that you don't need to be spreading rumors, or that the story changes the more people are involved in the story. You know, that's the reason why we always look to the Bible as the authority of all matters spiritually, because it's never changed. and that it's always God's word and it's always the truth and it's revealed straight from the heart of God to us. By the way, the juicier the gossip is, the faster it usually spreads. So that's another thing. Psalm 62 and verse 4, they delight in lies, they bless with their mouth, but they curse inwardly. What kind of lie is that? They bless with their mouth, but they curse inwardly. Yeah, that's hypocrisy, isn't it? To pretend that someone is your friend, and then to turn around and to speak badly about them is a lie, isn't it? It's not only a misrepresentation of someone, but it's a misrepresentation of your relationship with that person to the point where you don't know who your friends are. And that's, I don't know about you, but I would rather someone come up and tell me that they just didn't like me than to tell me they like me and then go tell someone else they didn't like me, right? Just tell me how it is. Tell me the truth, and we can work with the truth, but you can't work with a lie. So go ahead, Bill. I'm going to say one more thing. Yeah, it only hurts. It's just a little. That's where I didn't want to end up with this with Abraham. And with Rahab, what Rahab was doing, I wouldn't call what Rahab was doing a lie in the biblical sense of the deception that was sinful. It was something that she was doing to protect God's servants. And so she did not reveal their identity, or she did not, you know, let people know that she was harboring them. So I think that we need to make a distinction. So I think I've mentioned this to you before about my children. Children lie. All right, they're the probably the worst liars, and they don't know how to do it very well because they're learning. Now, there are some people that are very good at lying, unfortunately. The problem with that is the more that you lie, the better memory you need to have because those things usually compile. And we probably need to go ahead and be honest. Maybe someone's lied to you, or they haven't told you the whole truth. You've done the same thing. Okay, so let's not piggyback on that and point our fingers at someone else. But I have three children, but I do have one of them that has never lied to us. Never lied to us. It has something to do with, as you know, Daniel has borderline Asperger's, and we haven't spoken about this much at church, and we don't want to make him feel like he's different than the other kids, but he does have, you know, a challenge. But one of the things that I've found about even kids that are challenged in different ways is that there is beauty in God's design that just makes all children different. And I would not change Daniel one moment. I love him with all my heart. And the best thing about him maybe is that he's never told a lie, because the other two have lied through their teeth. And you know what? I could ask Lissa right now if she brushed her teeth, and she probably lied to me, say yes. Then I would just say, no, you didn't. Then she smiles and she goes, okay, go do it. But, you know, my oldest, I don't mind revealing these things about my kids because my kids are great and I love them. And we're raising them up and we need your help. But Luke doesn't want to disappoint us. He's that first child that doesn't want to disappoint us. And so if we sometimes call him on something, rather than admit that he's done it wrong and face the consequences, he wants to twist that and maybe tell an untruth. And what I've told him is, Luke, we cannot work with a lie. We can work with the truth, but we find out that you're lying, the punishment is going to be 10 times as bad. So you just got to whatever you've done, you can be forgiven no matter what you've done. But if you tell us the truth, if you don't tell us the truth, then how can we move forward here? So it's something that we're working on. But the reason why Daniel doesn't lie is because he doesn't care about the consequences. He figures it's worth dying for. Anything that he does, he figures it's worth dying for. And that goes back to what Jesus said about your yes being yes and your no being no. And maybe Abraham's struggle was that he didn't feel like on this particular occasion that his relationship with his wife was worth dying for, right? So it's better to tell the truth. it saves a lot of heartache, a lot of people. And trust is broken, and when trust is broken, it takes a while to form it back again. However, let's realize that the one who has been unfaithful is us, not God. And every person in your life at some point is going to let you down in that way, and maybe not always be honest with you, but it's something that we can work on. One of the reasons why, by the way, one of the reasons why my son might not tell me the truth is because maybe I'm so harsh that he's afraid of me. And I have to think about that too, right? If every single time he tells the truth, he's going to get punished, then maybe I need to lighten up a little bit so that he doesn't fear me so much that he would just go ahead and be honest. So I've found that even in relationships where the truth is not always told, that sometimes both people need to be more forthcoming and more helpful to one another, so that an atmosphere of truth can exist in a family, in a home, in the church, in every situation. So these are just thoughts in my mind. Why do people lie? Here's a few things. Because of pride and jealousy. Matthew 27, verses 17 and 18. For he knew that because of envy they had delivered him up. The Jews were envious of the Lord in his popularity, which to them was a setback for their agenda. And so because they were jealous of Jesus' status, they lied about who he was. Some people lie because of ulterior motives, hidden agendas, to gain advantage over someone else. Even those who flatter and tell people that they're wonderful. You know, sometimes a flatterer is, if a person tells you that they love you all the time, well, watch out, right? Because you're not lovable all the time. Some people lie because of hatred. A lying tongue hates those who are cursed by it, Proverbs 26:28. Another reason why people lie is to cover up a shortcoming, to put the blame on other people, to shift responsibility. That's what I was talking about with our kids. I think they do that a lot. I didn't do it. Well, they made me do it, right? What was the first thing that Adam and Eve said, right? It wasn't my fault. Someone else made me do that. People lie because of fear. They're afraid to take responsibility for their words and actions. Some people do it because they think they will gain popularity or gain growth in business. Some people think that it's actually being savvy to be dishonest in business, to cheat other people so that you can get to the top, right? Happens all the time. In fact, it's almost a sad thing that we think that anybody that has any money, what's the assumption we make? They stepped on people on their way, right? And that's not always the case, but that's a human assumption that we make. Social lies, white lies. Here was an example. My wife was not going to be in this class tonight, so we were at dinner, and I was saying, what do you think about Abraham when he was, and Sarah, and not telling the whole truth? And she said, well, I think it's kind of like when I was in college, she said, and if I was there with my roommates, and she said, sometimes a boy would call that we didn't like, but maybe, or one of the girls didn't like, didn't want to be bothered by, so we would just take the phone, and they would go stand in the shower. And we'd say, well, she's in the shower right now. She can't talk. Or they'd go out in the hallway. Well, she's not in the room right now. You know, she can't talk. So that's an example, I guess, of changing the scenario so that you're not necessarily telling a lie, but you're also just avoiding a situation that you don't want to deal with. And I think sometimes that's a human element that we all has anyone ever called you before that you didn't want to talk to? Or like maybe someone knocks on your door about 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning that wants to give you some material to consider, and your kid goes to the door and you're like, tell him I'm not home. You know, I think that's something that sometimes does happen. I couldn't hear what you said. Yeah. Yeah, telemarketers. The best thing with telemarketers now anymore is just if you get a phone number you don't know, just don't answer it anymore. That's very true. They do that. That's true. Local. Well, what do we come away with here? We want to be truthful people. We want to be people of the book. We want to tell the truth all the time, as much as is possible for us. There may be situations in which not revealing all the information is best, and that's something that I think we need to make a choice about. But when it comes to what is right and wrong, you know, it's never right to be deceptive. It's never going to result in good results for you or the people that are around you. And if you become a pathological liar, you're going to lose your soul. So it's just like any other sin. One of the reasons why we have to be careful about it is because it's very easy to find a reason to not tell the whole truth. And once that becomes patterned, then you can turn into a person that's dishonest in all areas of life. And so that's something that we need to continue to be prayerful about. And know when to reveal information and when not to reveal information is important. All right, thank you for being here tonight. Next week we're going to talk about when we show favoritism to children, what can be the consequences of that, and how should we parent our different kids? I've got three different kids, and none of them are anything alike, and I'm trying to figure out how to deal with it, each one of them individually, and also let them individually know that they're just as important as the other. And there's some examples, of course, in the Old Testament about favoritism, and where that led the children of Israel down the wrong path. All right, thanks for being here.